Hello and welcome to the Open Systems Media IoT panel, Security for Silicon Software and Sensors. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's panelists, Tu Li from Flexera Software, James Kirkland from Red Hat, Stan Schneider from RTI, and Dave Hart from ThingWorks. Today's panel will be about 50 minutes long, leaving 10 minutes at the end of the hour for audience Q&A. Before we begin, I'd like to run down some important features of your viewing console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button allows you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this e-cast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate in today's event. You can simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the panel. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're hearing the panelists' responses and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A. And if you have any questions pertaining to the e-cast operation itself, you can submit those too. And one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the e-cast. We have an all-star panel today. Very happy to have everyone aboard with vast experience in the IoT and security space. Tu Li is a senior product manager with Flexera Software. He has over 14 years of security experience that spans cryptography, anti-piracy, software licensing, and entitlement management. James Kirkland is a chief architect, IO2, and intelligent systems at Red Hat. James has specialized expertise within IoT in the transportation and energy markets with the best depth of experience in Linux and Unix variants. We're looking forward to hearing what he has to say. Stan Schneider is a CEO of RTI, the Industrial Internet of Things connectivity platform company. Stan is an industry pioneer and visionary within the IIoT space. He has vast experience in IIoT and applications and use cases. Stan's also a member of the Industrial Internet Consortium Steering Committee. And Dave Hart is a chief technology officer at ThingWorks. Dave is an industry expert in IoT, and he's led various development and a variety of IoT platforms and applications with a lot of experience in architecture, design, and implementation of those IoT system solutions. Welcome, gentlemen, and thank you for participating in the panel today. We'd like to get started with our topic one here, security, applications, and architectures. Let's talk about the big picture difference between what people will say in the market being consumer IoT and industrial IoT. Are these lines blurring? Is there really a difference? Consumer IoT devices are finding their way into more mission-critical applications like auto, medical, and industrial. What is the architecture for these IoT systems, and what kind of architectural components differentiate or maybe are the same within these kinds of IoT systems? Stan, maybe you can begin today.
Okay, great. Hi, I'm Stan Schneider. But first of all, you know, you did a good job splitting it between the consumer IoT and the industrial IoT there. Really pretty different, in my humble opinion. The consumer IoT is things like wearable watches and smart appliances and sprinklers and thermostats and smart milk bottles and ways to track your cat and smart toilets so you can tell if your elderly mother has used the bathroom today. They're mostly new applications of existing consumer products. But from an architectural standpoint, especially, you know, we're a connectivity company, they're mostly pretty weakly connected. You connect to your thermostat, there's not really much reason for you to connect to your neighbor's thermostat or my thermostat in California. And so, you know, architecturally, you see things like hub and spoke or even single socket connections. In the industrial side, it's very different. Industrial IoT is things like intelligent transportation systems, smart grids, smart cities, smart medical systems. It's infrastructure. And it's mostly what they call brownfield. Big existing networks that need to be hooked together. There's huge opportunity just to optimize things, but we actually believe a bigger opportunity to change the infrastructure to get new classes of applications like smarter, safer roads and cars that drive themselves and planes that fly themselves and hospitals with devices that can be an intelligent distributed system and monitor you and keep you safer. And power grids that can use solar and wind power effectively It's really shocking how bad that is today. I won't go into that right now, but it's really inefficient today. But it's very different architecture. IIC is working very hard on architecture. I suppose I'll leak a little bit that architecture announcement is coming out very, very soon, likely tomorrow. If you want to get a copy of it, send me an email. We'll also link to it up on our site, but I don't know how else to tell you to get it right now. Our site, rti.com. But anyhow, the consumer IoT is 80% of the hype, and the industrial IoT, I think, is 80% of the value because it really does change the productivity of the planet. And I actually don't think the lines are all that blurred, at least not yet, at least not from an architectural standpoint, and especially from the security standpoint. So, the challenges in the security side are really around reliability, because there's huge concepts of downtime, performance, in measured milliseconds or microseconds, and latency and throughput and liveliness, and guarantees about getting updates, and scale can be much, much larger. And the security, I'll talk about consequences later, but the security consequences are much larger. You can take down significant infrastructure or public infrastructure. It's a devastating economic and potential safety issue. You know, privacy is important for the consumer side, but it's not nearly as widespread of an impact to take that down. So.
Great. Flexera's viewpoint on IoT, industrial IoT applications and architecture.
Yeah, okay. Hi, everyone. Well, basically, we've been working with hardware vendors for close to 20 years, and we've seen many different application architecture for the Internet of Things. As you can imagine, many times the value is not in the hardware or device itself, but actually in the application and software embedded on the device or that manage that device. If we carry that over to the Internet of Things and connected devices, it is critical to have the ability to collect and understand usage of that device and the software that runs on it, as well as analytics on product use and report logs. So for example, we have worked with many manufacturers across a broad range of industry that have very different Internet of Things business models. A few use cases that comes to mind include a medical manufacturer that needed to meter how many times a doctor is allowed to use an MRI and store images in the cloud. Another example, an audio producer that we've been working with that needed to enable customers to download apps from the App Store and as well as update features on the device and then store that media in the cloud. And lastly, a network manufacturer mostly commonly use a gateway model where all the end devices need to send usage and provide data to a common gateway, and the application running on the gateway control the behaviors of the end devices. All of these examples, of course, have a common theme, and one of that is making hardware more intelligent by using software. So a key consideration is to architect your software with technology that enable you to protect and monetize in a variety of ways so that you can practically profit from the Internet of Things.
Okay, great. Thanks, too. Dave.
Yes, hello. I agree that I don't think the lines are really blurring all that much yet. So in the consumer home space, you're looking at interoperability on the edge. The concerns around privacy, don't be evil, concerns about Big Brother. Whereas industrial, a lot of the focus is more about interoperability at the cloud level. So, security focus on identity management, access control. I'd say the consumer devices tend to change more frequently. There's a different time pressure to market, whereas industrial, the industrial world's been at this for quite a while, often designed for very long-lived devices, often in a highly regulated environment, which adds a bit of rigor. The industrial often sees more of a closed community, sometimes even a 100% closed-off network with a lot of controls. And when those are exposed on the Internet, you'll see things pop up like policy management for controlling, equipment from different vendors, whereas you don't see that so much in the consumer space. Another difference would be in the consumer devices are they're more publicized, easier to get your hands on, a little bit easier for people to tinker around and play with in many cases, which adds a kind of a different kind of exposure. But one of the big differences, in my view, is the human-to-device ratio. So in industrial, the focus is very much on automation and on removing humans from the equation, whereas in the consumer, it's you know, generally more about making a person's life easier and more comfortable. So in the consumer, you'll see you know one or more humans per device. But I'd say there is commonality. Both agree on the you know fundamental foundations of security are important to both. So things like you know, authentication, encryption, identity management, tamper-proofing, you know, data integrity, all play a role.
Okay, great. James with Red Hat.
Well, I just wanted to echo what the other gentleman has said. You know, I think it's all good. You know, you're going to have varying levels of complexity with consumer models. You know, it's typically going to be a device like a thermostat going into the into cloud applications and then maybe with a mobile interface, whereas with industrial and enterprise applications, you're going to see you know, much more complexity both in the architecture itself, in that you know you may have as was said gateways. You have may have layers of gateways with different functionality, different endpoints, and you're also going to have a wider variety of devices that you're going to have to manage, and the complexity of that management is much. You know, much broader because you're not talking about a closed system, you know, in the sense that it, you know, Nest is one type of device or a series of devices that connect into the Nest cloud. You're going to have devices from, you know, tens to hundreds of manufacturers that are part of this and. You've got to integrate them and manage them cohesively for vulnerability management. You've got to use PKI or something else to authenticate them on the network as a valid actor. You've got to set up, you know, probably multiple layers of network security, firewalling, NATing, however you're doing it. So there's a lot more complexity in the solution. There's certainly more control as well, but with that control comes you know, a lot of potential additional work. And in the end, you know, it's the company that is going to have the vulnerability and the vulnerability scale, you know, having a thermostat or a smart light bulb or whatever that gets compromised may be bad for that vendor, but, you know, it's nothing to the scale of having having an electrical system or transportation system or, you know, something compromised and potentially putting people's lives at risk.
Right. Very interesting observations. Let's move on to the topic number two here, the security architecture itself. So let's talk about a little bit more about the security architecture in more detail for these IoT systems. I mean, Stan, you mentioned brownfield pre-existing infrastructure that has some sort of, you know, security concept or maybe not. And I think, Dave, I think you mentioned in terms of IIoT removing persons from the equation, which presents less manual things but perhaps more vulnerabilities. What kinds of bad things can happen in this world? Are there important components to address within the security architecture? You touched upon authentication. Maybe there's even image corruption, attempts to steal the software or intellectual property within the IoT system, data breaches, those kinds of things. James, maybe you can kick us off with this topic.
Sure, thanks. So I think part of it is having a layered security policy in that you don't rely on any one thing. You know, if you just rely on encryption in flight, you know, you have vulnerability for man-in-the-middle attacks. You have vulnerability for someone accessing devices and getting to data that's at rest on a device or a gateway or wherever. So you've got to have layers. You have to have, you know, encryption. You have to have some form of authentication to authenticate the devices and applications and potentially users in the system. You know, you've got to layer all these different pieces. You've got to layer network control, firewalling, application whitelisting, all those different pieces together, because any one vector, you know, there's a chance that it could be compromised, but having those multiple layers of defense that if there is a spoofing or, you know, some sort of backdoor that somebody gets into on a system, that there's other layers of protection. The other thing I'd say is that there needs to be a taxonomy for the data that's out there, because, you know, in the end, you may have one device or multiple devices or multiple systems that are compromised, but there's hierarchies for the data, so that if it's aggregate, just telemetry data that's coming off sensors, there may be some use in aggregate for it, but it's, you know, it's just data, and it may only be encrypted in flight, and the standards may be lower, whereas if you have private health data for a consumer coming off of a medical device, you know, you need, or any kind of, you know, you think about some of the retailers that have been compromised, you know, anything that is personal and private and identifies a consumer or has a, you know, a private business function, or, you know, a control message where we're sending controls out to actuators or to switches or things like that, where you're controlling, where you're updating private keys. All of those things have to have different levels of security, and so you don't necessarily need to treat everything the same. So it's important to have, you know, that data taxonomy, the hierarchy, and security policies around each one of them, because the other half of it is, you know, it all has to be process-oriented. It has to be something that's built into the system and is done, you know, as much as automatically as possible, because people get comfortable. If you look at some of the retail issues that have happened recently, they've happened because people had sloppy password policies or had sloppy InfoSec policies and got away with it for years and years and years. And so they assumed there was no risk. And that sort of goes back to the problem if you look at the challenger, that just because you've been doing something risky for 5 or 10 years doesn't mean you're safe. It just means you're lucky. And so I think it's important to look at all those aspects.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. Two, you mentioned that making hardware more intelligent through software and differentiation. You touched in the first section about logging and statistics as well, and the data architecture. How does that feed into the security architecture for these kinds of IoT applications?
Yeah, so basically on the same point as what Jabe just pointed out, you know, in our experience in working with the Internet of Things providers, it is critical to educate on security. We found that security can be effective if it is designed into the product and applied in layers, so, you know, similar ideas that James just pointed out. In the past, hardware vendors normally would rely on physical security, but as more vendors are moving away from proprietary hardware, security do play an enormous role in both hardware and application development. Now manufacturer needs to look at all layers that makes up the Internet of Things. You know, for example, we're looking at device security, OS security, application and networking security. As mentioned, applying security throughout the product lifecycle is critical. So if you think about security in layers, it might look something like this. At the device level, use things like secure booting to ensure that the system only runs trusted software during the boot up process. From an OS layer, use things like containers to sandbox the application so that if or when it does get compromised or crashes, it does not affect the integrity of the overall system. From an application layer, there are two approaches. The first is to always make sure that you always apply best practice to your development process. So, for example, making sure that you validate all input parameters to prevent malicious code injection. And second, to harden your application. So, for example, at Flexera Software, we recommend our customer to use tamper-resistant application. It's a technology to prevent hacking. It provides three layers of defense against hacking. One layer that provides code obfuscation, another that detects whenever a binary has been tampered so that you can take action. Normally, we would find that Manny would simply shut down the application. And lastly, a resistant layer where it makes it difficult for hackers to debug or spoof the application signature. And lastly, from a networking or a communication layer, always make sure that all data in motion is encrypted and leverage some kind of secure communication as much as possible to prevent eavesdropping. But in short, always implement security in layers to protect the identity of the device and also its data.
Okay, I see. So similarly aligned to James, and you gave a lot of good examples in terms of secure boot, trusted software, containers, not only for security, but maybe even accidental crashes, not just malicious kinds of things. Stan, you want to weigh in on security architecture?
Sure. Thanks a lot. So maybe I'll start out with your question at the top of the slide here, what bad things can happen. Again, there's a pretty good difference between the consumer and the industrial. The consumer IoT, it's really mostly about privacy, I would say, rather than security. Consequences of a breach are usually, you lose time or money or your reputation. Maybe lots of people could use time or money, but it's not a disaster. Industrial infrastructure, this is going to be the world's most critical infrastructure. Air traffic shuts down, power systems fail, hospitals stop working, planes crash, front page headlines for weeks on end. It's a huge societal impact. And the adversary in security is sometimes much more dangerous. They have very different motivations and things like that. So I think they're pretty different. From an architectural point of view, we sell connectivity. That really means middleware. We connect things to other things. And we have a very complete solution there and for the middleware protection. And middleware is really a natural security point. We can't really protect any one node so much. It's not what we're trying to do, but we can protect, make sure that the system on a fine-grained data flow point of view is well controlled. In a typical system, there's just many different boundaries. So there's sort of boundary security, which is you put our firewalls around everything, which are physical. It's great as long as you don't get inside the eggshell. And then there's sort of transport level security where you're encrypting what's on the wire, which is also nice. But I think the really important thing in security in big complex systems like that is to map the security to the architecture of the system. There's a DDS standard, a standard that we follow. There's a data flow control standard. It controls the flow of information between nodes, between users and consumers of that information. It can control, it controls rates and reliability and performance and things like that. You can add security to that, and security has to exactly match the architecture. So if the connectivity supports publish-subscribe, the security has to support publish-subscribe. If the connectivity supports multicast, the security has to support multicast. The connectivity supports dynamic plug-and-play discovery, so it can go find things and add them into the network. The security has to support that. And so, if you do that, if you really do match the security to the architecture, people always say the mantra, security can't be an afterthought, designed in from the beginning. That really is the essence of designing in from the beginning. And if you've done a good job with designing it in like that, it can be an afterthought. You can actually take a running system and add security to it without writing any code, just by configuring in security. And the reason for that is because, it's very fine-grained and it maps to the flow. And you don't have to trust a whole node or a whole computer. You don't even know where things are running these days. You trust applications and distributed systems paths, and you also have to support redundancy and failover. It's a tough problem. The DDS security spec is sort of the new player in town. It's only been out. It's actually not even finalized yet. It's being tested by some of the biggest names in the security world, APL and NSA and Quantico and all those places, but it's actually an interoperable, very capable, does authentication, access control, you know, tagging, logging, non-repudiation, everything. And it's a very different way of looking at the world.
Right. Can it support this hierarchy of security that James mentioned? Is there that level of understanding in the...
I'd sort of look at it as, I mean, a good security policy has a lot of layers, right? So it's one of the layers. In fact, it has more than just layers. So, you know, like I said, there's a boundary security, which is firewalls and things, and then transport security, you can encrypt the transports, and then, you know, you can have this fine-grained security actually controls all the data flows. But there's also, you know, many of like my laptop has a firewall and a virus checker, so it's protection and detection. So the firewall theoretically keeps bad things off of it. The virus checker makes sure that it's checking to see if there's something got on it anyway. And
right.
So really good security has both protection and detection, and the data bus architecture makes that easier. I've got a great example from Power Industries. I had time, but I don't.
Okay, thanks. Dave, your comments on security architecture and applications.
Sure. So in terms of bad things that can happen, there's all kinds of examples. Stuxnet, coming out of the SCADA space, was probably the perfect one, and one of the times a lot of the earlier players in the IoT really started, you know, put their head up and said, oh my gosh, we got to get serious about some of these security issues, because once you talk about moving beyond sensors into control, you know, you can have serious, you know, potentially deadly consequences. And sniffing is bad. And I think, as someone else pointed out, you know, maybe not as bad on a toaster, but when you get into personal information or healthcare information, it can be pretty serious implications. And firmware update is something that isn't always thought of as control, but if you think about the way viruses spread and the need for remote management in an IoT solution, remote device management, you know, firmware update managed from the cloud, I think that's certainly a potential for some pretty nasty things to go on, you know, including things that you'd see from your standard, you know, laptop where someone's using it as a spam server or a, you know, generator of DDoS attacks. Another consideration, if you look at the general scale of IoT, it's massive. The numbers that are out for what people say, how big this market is and how many devices, are just mind-blowing. And that certainly has security implications, so it turns security into more of an engineering problem. So, for instance, in cryptography, you know, it's intentionally designed to be computationally inefficient. And when you marry that with the scale that we're seeing, you know, it turns it into just a different kind of a problem to solve at scale. And I mentioned on the last question, removing the human element from the equation around automation, you know, that destroys a lot of security models where you use, a human to authenticate based on things you know or questions you know or things that are typed in or, you know, possession of some information or some physical hardware, whereas in IoT, you know, you have to find other solutions for that, you know, looking at characteristics of the machine. This is where things like you know, the TPM model comes into play, and you know, trusted stores. But the other is when they're based, you know, the models that are based around a one-to-end human device just aren't effective for IoT. A lot of the early days in IoT, and still for some solutions that you see, people will move towards convenience, which is very tempting. You hear people talk about tofu, trust on first use, and people want to trust a thing on first use because it's convenient. It makes the registration process easy, removes some of the security burden of identity management, but it's really a very bad thing to do. There was a customer that we went to see who was considering using our platform, and we were, you know, doing some evaluation of their system, and we found that we could very, very easily you know, first time register as a device and then go to their UI and log in that device. So suddenly masquerading as a device with no security controls, we have control over their entire device population. So the kind of things that, you know, would be really embarrassing for something to get out the door and happen, you need to consider them early. Someone made the point of, you know, if you've designed in security, you're way ahead of the game, but not designing it in is terrible from a retrofit perspective. So, and exacerbated greatly. So that, if it's a hardware issue, that's one very large set of challenges. It's a software issue, that can be even a bigger set of challenges, especially if you've lost control and the ability to update your software. Another thing that we'll see is in a lot of IoT projects, IoT projects, probably more than kind of a purpose-built IoT product, will be run, from a time-to-market perspective and run on a project budget rather than, looking at it as a platform budget and attacking the security issues holistically. And I think we're really, really beyond that time in IoT. So that was a great comment. One of the earlier speakers mentioned about, just because you've been doing that for a long time, it's not secure, doesn't mean it's acceptable. And the industrial internet has also mentioned that you're often walking into existing protocols that weren't necessarily designed for IoT, and customers who want to run those in a long-haul scenario, which just is absolutely not secure. Or our platform, we have the ability to plug in different long-haul protocols, sometimes coming from fixed-purpose devices that you can't program or change. Original thought from our marketing team was we want to make that something our customers can do to expand our ecosystem. But as you look at those protocols, some of them just, frankly, aren't secure. They'll make choices, based on cost or convenience, which they believe is a good idea, but, just something that, for us, we have to walk away from.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So let's bring it back around to silicon software and sensors here. What kinds of methods are used to authenticate user access and sensor information to prevent things like spoofing or of sensor data? What kinds of capabilities need to be built into the silicon or software to prevent a security threat? I think I saw a question related to that today that came in from the audience. Protecting the data in the cloud, like you mentioned, medical records and those kinds of things is another big issue. These functions and features move from device to sensor to gateway to cloud and back and forth. What kinds of things need to be built into silicon software and sensors to strengthen the security architecture? Let's start here with Dave.
I think you asked the question the right way, and others have alluded to it as far as the stack, but it's really, in IoT, the value comes from the aggregate, and this means that security needs to look at the aggregate as well. So the user defenses need to be placed accordingly. Threat models got to move beyond a single point of compromise and look at compromise at scale. Sometimes losing a single node is very acceptable in the IoT space, but the danger and potential of losing entire class devices or the aggregation point in the cloud could be catastrophic. As far as identity, what you see in the space versus what actually needs to be there aren't always the same, because establishing and controlling that identity is costly and frankly a bit cumbersome right now. There are a lot of movements in the space to move towards complete PKI for that solution, and a number of companies who are dedicated to trying to make that a little bit more simple kind of a problem to attack. As mentioned earlier, as far as securing, how to secure your actual, physical hardware, things like secure boot and TVM and segmenting and containers, maybe do a virtual machine, securing the actual sensor data can be really tough because those electrical impulses often plugged into a gateway, so not opportunity there other than the way you build your hardware. From the cloud always blurs security, so virtualization adds complexity to your security zones. It's always been the purview of network admins and operation folks for security, but this generation of security, including IoT, the focus really needs to be heavily on application security. So if you think about the number of connected things, your next thought should be, where is the value coming from these things? And it's often the application. So things like, dynamic scans and static scans, things like, very clear communication to people who are building these solutions of what the issues and challenges are, and advice and guidance. And another would be, aggregation might exist in the cloud, but the control plane, that is moving often to be on mobile devices. So if you look at the nexus of IoT, cloud computing, mobile, these security challenges are all on emerging technology, and they all fell very squarely into the "this is something I'm scared of" quadrant from security folks. And we took a survey of our sales team and asked them what was the number one concern they're hearing from customers, and it came back, you know, very loudly as the concern is security. And that's, you know, that wasn't the case, you know, a couple of years ago, frankly. You know, it was functionality and features, and how do I get to market, and how do I differentiate? So that's a recent change, and I think it's a very good change.
Yeah, interesting. James, in terms of Red Hat, you play across device, gateway, cloud. What kinds of security considerations for silicon, software, and sensors are you thinking are important?
Yeah, so one aspect that's been touched on, but I'll dive in a little bit more, is around the containerization and secure boot. You know, I think anything that is not in a secure data center or running on the cloud, you have to have, you know, something built in to ensure trust. So, for example, you know, we have customers that are running or in the process of standing up. You know, we have Atomic RHEL, or Atomic Platform, which is, you know, a thin operating system that just allows, you know, is essentially there for running containers. And one of the aspects of that you can use is to have the applications running in the container, have an immutable application and operating system space, and then you can feed it another file system for application data, so that you know, you can essentially checksum or secure that the operating system and application binary file system. And then you have an AB set of file systems for that, so that when you're running on the operating system and application executable file system A, you can trickle down updates to B, and then you can boot and switch over. So you're separating the writable application data from what should be relatively immutable, which is the operating system and application executables. So with secure boot and with a large chunk of the operating system and application environment immutable and checksummable or verifiable with, you know, in some fashion, you're able to have these devices out on the edge, you know, whether they're gateways or sensors or whatever, to control, really limit down the footprint, the attack vector, especially when you then take the application file system and you encrypt it, and you also, you know, use tools like SE Linux to inhibit application execution on that file system. You can really lock down your threat vector. In the cloud, obviously, you know, it's more of a, or in the data center, it's more of a traditional environment. You know, you've got to go through all of the normal IT security processes, but you still have all these actors that are, you know, out there, sensors and gateways and things like that, feeding data that could be an opening. So, you know, we talked about compartmentalization and, you know, having trusted, verified actors in the system based on certificates or whatever the mechanism is. It's really important that there be multiple layers of abstraction between, and then you only allow certain types of traffic through through firewalling, and only from devices that are trusted, and trusted not based on, you know, a MAC address or something like that, but trusted based on having a secure boot, having applications and operating system environments that are either immutable or that are whitelisted and checksum, so that, you know, the application binaries can't be changed. You know, those sorts of things. I think it's really important, even down to the, you know, as much as you can at the sensor level, there's much less control and much less that you can do. But there's also less of an, you know, the further you get to the edge, there's less of an attack footprint, and less, you know, if you've got a temperature sensor somewhere that's running on an ARM embed with a very thin OS, it's single purpose, there's less to attack, and what you get out of attacking it is not as critical. I think when you get further up the stack to the gateways and those pieces where you have hundreds or thousands of sensors you're sending, aggregating data, sending control messages back down, I think that's really a point where you have to be really, really careful and put a lot of thought into it.
Right. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Let's see. Two, there was some mention of secure boot, and you mentioned differentiating through the software and feature enablement, disablement might be an area of vulnerability too. Do you have any comments on the security concerns for that kind of environment?
Yeah, so pretty much my focus is on software and cloud. As I indicated earlier, there are four considerations and recommendations that I would offer to the Internet of Things device manufacturer. I think the first is security is most effective is if it's designed into the product. You know, don't wait until the last minute to add in security. It will be too late then, right? Always apply security in layers, you know, for example, secure booting to make sure that trusted firmware is booted. Applying network security in terms of secure communication using TLS or SSL to exchange data. You know, open industry to cryptography is always better than homegrown. Build an internal device firewall to prevent privacy leak. Something that focus a lot more is applying application security. Put a lot of focus on that to harden the application to prevent malicious attack that can compromise the device. I think most importantly, I think because we know that hacking always happens, I think the key requirement is to make sure that you have a self-healing or self-updating capability so that a secure fix or patch can be deployed to customer quickly, right? And then I think, you know, lastly, implement technology to monetize your Internet of Things devices and application. If you can't, you know, the thing is, if you cannot make money and add value from your Internet of Things offering, it won't make a difference if it's secure or not.
Right. Okay, great. Stan, your thoughts on security considerations for silicon software and sensors.
Great. Well, thanks. First of all, I think that, you know, identity control is absolutely important. A hardware secure container is best, like TPM, to store the keys and certificates. That really only gets you the first step. You still have to provision things and credential things or register with a trusted authority. So, you know, it's a complex system, and especially in an industrial system, discovery is a real challenge. Just discovery without security is a big challenge because there can be thousands or hundreds of thousands or even millions of players in a system, and every one of them is a potential security risk. The DDS security standards spent a long time on that protocol exchange to make that reasonable and also secure. So, you know, the decision to bring in a new player into a working system is pretty important. And, you know, the reason for the fine-grained security is just because I have the ability to read some sensor information from a motor doesn't mean I should have the ability to turn the motor off or make it go faster or something that can damage the system. So there's definitely layers of permissions allowed in the system. But I do think the best security architect, the question bothers me a little bit. I do think it is important to really, you know, get a good hardware-based identity control. But the best security architecture doesn't really differentiate between sensors and silicon and edge and fog and cloud. Data flows all over the place. Security is really a systems problem. An architecture that treats each of these things separately without taking a holistic view is just doomed to complexity. And an architecture that treats them as part of the way it works can be much simpler. You know, industrial Internet of Things systems are all about the data. If you can make the data flow fundamentally match the security model, it works great. But in order to do that, we need to do things like support multicast security. I believe it's the only standard out there that's not just, you know, one-to-one secure communications, one to M secure communications, and setting up that configuration is a real trick. But I will say we see two kinds of customers out there. There's the check the box type, who, you know, you ask them, what do you want for security? Do you need security? Everybody says they need security. You need security? You say, yes. Well, what do you mean by that? And they don't have a good answer. It comes down to, yeah, I need to check this box and have it security secure. That's I think I should call that group B. And group A, you know, do you need to be secure? Yes. What do you mean by that? Well, I can't tell you because it needs to be very secure, and I'm not going to tell you about my threat models and things like that. And they can be very advanced and want very special things, and DDS standard tried to address both of those. There's the standard plugins that are interoperable between vendors. Check the box. They're actually pretty good, the modern stuff. But if you want to add something else, do it your own way or have your own encryption algorithm or add things, you know, you can use the plugin architecture to go in there and change that. Anyway, I think the best architecture is sort of a secure core connectivity standard with data flow control, with gateways to control getting on and off of it from other technologies. There's a lot of different connectivity technologies out there. Just sort of think of a gateway as a firewall on steroids, just so they can talk many different technologies. Right. Anyhow, in summary, industrial Internet of Things security is not a nice to have. It is a absolute must have. The architecture really needs to be, the security needs to be a part of the architecture. It's really important. It must map to the architecture. People say don't think of it later. It's really true, and it's easier said than done, don't think of it later, because when you're trying to put together an architecture in the first place, it's hard enough without the security. So I think, you know, there's been a lot of recent progress in building architectures that map to the security design. Like I said, the IIC's architecture is coming out very soon. Happy to set you up with that. Pretty interesting design.
Okay.
And
great.
Finally, I will say the middleware is a natural security control point, so use it.
All right. Yeah, lots of good information there and the things to think about. We are to the Q&A, and we've got a number of fantastic questions coming in. Let's start with one for Tuli here. With the implementation of entitlements and licensing, wouldn't the investment in IoT become expensive? Wouldn't it discourage new industries, you know, non-IT kinds of things from doing IoT? So what, well, I guess this is a complexity and cost issue in terms of how that adds to the IoT environment.
Yeah, I think licensing, the ability to monetize, enable features to be able to turn off capability or to add in capacity to a device actually reduces costs, right? Because from a manufacturing, you would make a single hardware, and then with licensing, you would basically turn on capabilities where traditionally you would have to implement new hardware. We are seeing from a market that a lot of IoT or at least device manufacturer are moving toward virtual appliances or things like Dockers to be able to do virtual machines. So a lot of emphasis, you know, are moving away from custom hardware, and they are considering or at least implementing licensing to reduce their costs. At the same time, capture additional revenue in terms of, you know, feature enablement, or to be able to capture usage data. Just what Stan mentioned, IoT is all about data. Be able to monetize those data. So a lot of the company that we help are considering licensing to be able to turn on feature and to capture usage to be able to maximize their revenue.
Okay, I see. There's a question about security standards. Let's start with James and then move to Stan. Are there a set of security standards that should be followed by these IoT manufacturers? Does that such a thing exist?
Yeah, so there's multiple ways to look at it. Obviously, there's things like Secure Boot that we talked about. There's, you know, building in part of it depends on the manufacturers and whether they're using firmware. Sensor vendors are typically not going to have an operating system per se, but they're going to have firmware, so they need to build in the capabilities for TLS and DTLS encryption, they need to be able to potentially accept some digital form or produce some digital form of identification, whether that's PKI, whether it's using DNSSEC. You know, that's one area where I think there's really a gap is in that digital identification for devices and then authenticating that device as who it says it is, because it's not just, you know, the gap and the standard is, where there is a standard is, it's things like PKI that are data center centric and then are also very centered on identifying the device and the device sending an identity, but it doesn't ensure the integrity of the device. So I think that's an area that's going to have to evolve and just get better, because, you know, that's key. I think if you look at some of the other standards that are out there for updating devices, they're oriented towards devices that generally have operating systems. So you look at stuff like LWM2M, you know, that could be leveraged for a device that's using a firmware-style operating system, certainly. And, you know, we've done some work with it, and it's relatively robust. So I think it's important these things are evolving. You know, I think it's important to get involved in the different standards bodies, be them the IIC, OIC, you know, these different bodies that are all talking about this. You know, I'd also say, you know, IEEE and some of the other groups are looking at it, because I think none of this stuff is really baked. And even if you look at, you know, ALSIN and OIC, even at the network transport layer, there's a multitude of standards and they're not interoperable. So I think security is falling into the same trap right now.
Right. Okay. Stan, you have a follow-up on the security standards?
Yeah, I think, you know, you've got to look at what the level of the standard. I think the right approach, first of all, I'm not talking about the consumer internet thing, I'm talking about the industrial internet thing. The right approach is to select the suite of standards that is put together in a way so you can have a shot at having an interoperable big system. PKI is a great way to do authentication, DSA, and then you got to still do access control through some governance file or some way to specify those permissions, which ideally is specified by some standard. And then the cryptography can be AES or, you know, whatever you're using. You know, the DDS standard picks something for each of those for the for each of these pieces, and then, you know, then you can have interoperable communications in the system. But there's always going to be pieces that don't fit that, and that's why you need to have the ability to have gateways and plugins that map those things together. It's still a little early for a really wide distributed standard interoperable security policy in that world.
Okay. Dave, here's an assertion one of the audience members is making. Maybe you can comment on it. The cloud provider cannot be trusted. He should only see encrypted data. Is that an assertion that you agree with?
Not totally. I certainly understand that perspective. And we see people, you know, not using the cloud, period, because of that kind of idea. So, you know, insistence on on-premise deployments. We also see government involvement. So, for instance, I need to distribute the system in such a way that I, you know, can globally distribute geographically where data is stored, so data not leaving a country, for instance. That kind of implications, maybe less on whether it's a cloud provider or not, but it certainly might affect your decisions there. Some data should be, and some data must be encrypted to deal with certain standards. But there's a cost to it. It's kind of related to the PKI conversation. So I'm a fan of PKI, but there's a lot of cost and overhead to it. So sometimes alternate ideas are more viable. But, you know, there's times when you have to encrypt data, sensitive data. Might be payment information. It might be personally identifiable information about patients that are coming through the cloud. That has to be encrypted, and that's, you know, generally regulated. But a lot of data, it would be very cost prohibitive to encrypt it, and it would be limiting as far as, you know, what the actual, you know, application and platform vendor can do in order to optimize your system. So I understand it, and in some cases I think that's true. In other cases, I think it's, you know, additional expense for negative value.
Right. Okay. Two, there's a question about application binary security, corruption. That's all good, but how do we do that kind of thing?
Yeah, so pretty much application binary, or at least to provide a solution around protecting the integrity of the binary is complex. You know, at Flexera, we implemented an embedded virtual machine. I mean, the goal is to, you know, the goal within application binary is to really make hacking difficult for the guy looking at the code, right? Mm-hmm. So that he doesn't have the blueprint to figure out what to bypass and what to patch. So in order for you to do that is you have to take him out of his element. Basically, you know, when he disassembles the application, or at least if he do get past the secure booting or in this case device firewall, and be able to grab the application, the actual software, you want to, and then of course he go through disassembling. You want to make you want to change from machine language to something that take him out of his element. So in Flexera, we practically embedded an embedded virtual machine where when he do disassemble the code, all you see is, you know, you see a mixture of machine language, and then he will see a bunch of not machine language, not specific types of machine language, but he won't be able to look at the blueprint of the application. So right. Things like, so that's how we prevent someone from looking at the blueprint. And then, of course, we also have threads that basically constantly check in memory as well as on disk the integrity of the application while running. And then, of course, lastly, I think if there is a suspect that the application has been tampered with, we have capability in our solution that can actually phone home, and then, you know, the vendor, the hardware vendor, is able to take that and apply a quick update to the application.
Right. Okay. James, there's a comment by an adept audience member about why didn't we mention locking down a threat vector, and they're probably right here. You alluded to like a hierarchical data model, which kind of alludes to that. I think Stan talked about threat models. Can we just spend 30 seconds on threat vectors and identifying them, and is that a good way to approach adding to your security architecture, just identifying one and then locking it down?
Yeah, well, so I mean, you're going to have to look and do a comprehensive threat analysis. So you have to look at it from one perspective, which is what are the different types of data and what the risk of loss or what loss of that data or compromising that data entails. What it, you know, if you're looking at telemetry data that an individual data point or even a year's worth of data points are essentially useless from an individual sensor, then the, you know, how you protect that's different than private personal data. From the same standpoint, from a threat vector standpoint, you know, you've got multiple threat vectors. You've got, you know, someone, if data is not encrypted in transit, then you've got the threat vector there. You've got to address it by encryption in transit. You've got to look at, you know, on disk and being, you know, at rest, the data could be compromised if the system itself is compromised. You look at, you know, somebody either getting in and you know, compromising the system itself and being, or just compromising a process and doing, you know, code injection. There's a million different vectors for attack. You know, a lot of them are commonly documented. I think you're exposed to more of them in the field outside the data center. So you've got to look at things like, you know, firewalling, whitelisting applications so that only applications that are allowed to are able to run, locking down data file systems and segregating them from file systems where application binaries run, you know, on disk encryption. So there's a lot of different ways to address those vectors, but I think the first step is to identify the risk to the data and the different threats to that data, and then coming up with coping strategy or you know, mitigation strategies to deal with it.
Okay, great. One final question for Stan, then Dave. What is the most important security technology in IoT, and what role does the hardware-based security have for that?
Yeah, I actually like to combine this with an answer to the previous question on threat vector. So I think, you know, trying to look for a silver bullet, simple thing like that is not reasonable in a complex system. IoT is actually working on a maturity model for security. Right? The energy department's done a lot of this with power plants and even nuclear plant things called C2M2. You know, I take a look at that. Cybersecurity capability maturity model, something like that. You need, but that's a comprehensive approach to the entire system. It's a systems problem. So you look at, you know, what the architecture is. Do you actually have a policy? Do you have workforce control so you know who's actually working on the system? And on and on and on. There's, you know, 20 different areas you can check at. You can hit check, and you can have different levels of competence and maturity in each of those areas. And, you know, a super secure system would have the highest maturity in all of those areas. We did, you know, those, we're not there yet, but you can definitely get closer to there by being somewhat organized about it, having a strategy.
Okay. Dave, 20 seconds on your thoughts. Most important security technology, and what role does the hardware-based security play?
Sure. Any technology that helps address the identity issue with devices is top of my list right now, probably why I gravitated toward the PKI conversation. So those are our key. Hardware security, I think we covered a lot of that, and I think it has a huge role to play.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. Unfortunately, we've run out of time and lots of great questions. Be sure to reach out to our panelists, and they'll be reaching out to you for the rest of those. Also want to turn your attention to the sponsor resources slide that's up right now. Lots of great stuff regarding IoT and security. I want to thank, too, James, Stan, and Dave for lending your expertise to our IoT security panel today. We at Open Systems Media, Flexera, Red Hat, RTI, and ThingWorks also want to thank you, the audience, for attending and contributing fantastic questions today. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast version will also be made available there. Thank you all for attending. Have a great day,